The group of players proved that they are there. The consistency of quarterfinals, semifinals, finals is impressive. And it shows that we have players who compete in the strongest league in the world, day in, day out. So we have the ingredients, and we fully trust that this is the moment to install maybe also from club football patterns, behaviors, principles that can maybe help to push the team over the line.
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
Well, are we going to have any wonderful exclusives this week, I wonder? I wonder if we're going to have a story like we had last week when we talked about Thomas Tuchel. We met up on Monday, and Thomas Tuchel was not really expected to be England manager the following day, but 24 hours, just as I was about to press send on the fresh new podcast, it was confirmed that the guy we had been talking about throughout the whole of the episode had been confirmed as England manager. And Jan, it was lucky that you sent a message telling me this had happened, because my finger was literally poised and I had to do a quick rewrite of it. The podcast was delayed by 10 minutes because of the information you gave me. And the information was that Thomas Tuchel was officially now the England manager. Crazy, isn't it?
It is crazy times. I mean, having just talked about it less than 24 hours before, when it popped up on my phone, and I think it was around lunchtime, I wasn't sure if I'd received a text message from one of you guys or something. I just saw Tuchel on the notification. Anyway, it turns out it was something from one of the media outlets. And so Thomas Tuchel is going to be England manager. He starts at the beginning of next year, doesn't he? So yeah. He's got a little bit of a way in. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I think it's very interesting. There were some of the predictable responses, which I'm sure we'll go into. But I think it's a very bold move for many reasons that the FA has taken there. He will, I think, get the best out of some of the players that we've got. He'll bring a completely different set of ideals to what we've been used to before. I'm not saying that the way that Southgate managed things was bad, but this will be a completely different way of doing things. So it'll be interesting. And providing that it doesn't go the way that it usually does when he's employed, in that he falls out with people, then it'll be quite a ride. Well, to be honest with you, whether he does or whether he doesn't fall out with people, it's going to be a ride either way. So, bring it on.
Terry, how's your opinion changed since we spoke about Thomas Tuchel last week to now? Because for me, on the Tuesday, I came around to the idea of, yeah, I think this is actually a really good idea. And I think this is actually right. This is the guy we actually need. And that was before it was actually announced. I was thinking, yeah, actually, no, Tuchel does make sense. How about yourself? Have your opinions altered, or have they become more entrenched over the last few days?
I had the privilege of then discussing this on the Talking Football podcast, which we record this usually on the Tuesday. We're recording on the Monday and I record on the Tuesday. So actually at that point, it was not confirmed, but it was confirmed. They just hadn't made the official announcement. And so I was sort of thinking, well, how do I feel about that? And I don't think my opinion's changed. I'm not altogether certain that this is a very good idea. I'm not altogether certain that Thomas Tuchel is the right guy to manage what I think is perhaps now a fairly dicey England dressing room. I'm worried about his relation management. I'm worried about how he gets on with players, but also other key stakeholders there. On the other side of that is, of course, Thomas Tuchel, the coach, which I think is probably what the FA are looking at. And they're looking at a guy who has a track record of turning around teams, making them play good football in a relatively short space of time. And of course, he has a track record of, well, kind of winning stuff as well. Kind of winning stuff. Did a very good job with Chelsea, obviously. And then you look at the length of the contract and you think, well, is most England coaches usually get 3 years and he's got 18 months. So he's basically got till the World Cup. And then I'm looking at this and thinking, what they've done here is that they feel, the FA, that they have created the circumstances where England now has a really, really good team. but needs now perhaps a top-class coach to sort of push them over the other end. And in that respect, they've gone for Tuchel. And in that respect, the appointment does make sense. The rest of it perhaps are considered to be hurdles and issues to be managed. And if they can be managed, then maybe it will work out. Does this mean England will win the World Cup in 2026? Probably not. But I guess the key thing is to try and make them much more likely to win than maybe they had done under Gareth Southgate. And perhaps it's a bit of an admission that although Southgate did many, many great things in developing that England side, that in fact, we needed to go a little bit further, bring in someone with proven quality to be able to push them over the edge and maybe hopefully get that trophy. Has that answered your question? I don't think it has it really?
It's an answer. I think you've talked long enough for people to forget what I actually asked you, so I think that's fine.
Yeah, I do try and answer questions if possible. So no, my opinion has not changed, but I am reconciled to the reality of the situation. Thomas Tuchel is the England coach, and so I'm looking forward to seeing what happens next.
My concern was the same one that Jan has, the fact that wherever he's been, he's fallen out with the people in charge, and that is a recurring theme. Well, I don't know if it happened at Mainz. I don't know if no. that was a problem there.
Well, actually, yes.
Right, okay.
Yeah, yes, but I mean, he was there for a while.
Yeah.
But that's the 18-month thing, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
If he got 3 years, you'd be thinking, ooh. But 18 months, that'll be probably enough.
Yeah.
And if he can do something interesting, then...
And again, though, that's club football. And so you're always going to have people who have investment in players or want to invest in players, and people at clubs who are going to be making decisions that are taking a little bit of the control of the manager there. You would hope in international football that level of interference from owners, because there aren't owners, they're just suits in the FA. Or of course, there are people who want to have an opinion on England, and there is going to be a lot of pressure from the media, more so than usual, you would suspect. But I wonder if this is what he's suited to. It could be that he turns out to be one of the best international managers around, and he could actually get the German job before Klopp does. So I'm just sort of thinking that this potentially could work. I think it was Leon Osman on Football Focus on Saturday who pointed out that while Gareth Southgate did a really good job and probably did the best job as an England manager, when you look at the final of the Euros, where it was basically him versus Mancini, and Mancini had more experience, had that winning mentality, and managed to take his, frankly, not as good Italy side and won the game. That's what you're getting with Tuchel, isn't it? You are getting someone who has won stuff, who's won the biggest prizes in football. He's also missed out on winning them, but he's actually been there or thereabouts at the end of it, isn't he? So I think it's a really good appointment. Of course, we did mention this last week, but it is going to piss off all the right people as well. So the reaction that came out in the days afterwards was completely not surprising at all, was it, Jan?
Well, actually, there was only really one back page that jumped out, which was the Daily Mail. Which is not surprising at all, is it, saying it was a dark day for England, which is just, you know, a real shortcut to thinking. Because if Guardiola had been named as England manager, not that that was ever going to happen, but if he had been, then no one would have been complaining that a Catalan had been named as England manager. Of course, we don't have the complex history with Catalonia or Spain that we have with Germany. But most of us have moved past that after 80 years. The Daily Mail, for international listeners, is a bit like Fox News, and they are never moving past World War II. So, you know, that belongs in the bin, and that's where it should stay. But, you know, looking at the rest of the press, and I think generally most people we spoke to, they were fine about it. Even some of my very right-wing friends were okay with it, which is good to see. It's good to see. He's managed at some of the biggest clubs in the world. He's won stuff, as you said. So why not bring in probably the best manager England could get hold of at the time?
Terry, it does feel like they've actually gone a little bit easy on him.
Mm.
Are they just saving it all up for when it goes absolutely awful?
I think they could do. I think there's a possibility that Thomas Tuchel might have won some friends in the media while he was in England. When this story sort of initially broke, it came from the German side. And we were talking about this on that Talking Football podcast in the preamble before we recorded. There's a guy called Christian Falk who works for Bild, and he is very close to Tuchel, and a lot of Tuchel-related stories broke when he was manager at Bayern Munich in order to deal with the various media fires that Tuchel himself was responsible for when he was Bayern coach. And I believe that this story about him coming to England originated from him, and at which point you're thinking, well, actually, then this is quite close. It's entirely possible that as Chelsea coach that he was wise enough to build some relationships with the English media, which might explain why that some of them have gone a little bit easier on them. It may also be that a lot of English media journalists now perhaps skew a little bit younger than maybe some of the old school. You know, the guys like Martin Samuel and, you know, his ilk. I'm not suggesting Martin Samuel would necessarily take that view, but that generation of the big beast number one journalists seems to have been taken over by a younger breed who may well not look at things that way. And I do feel that Thomas Tuchel has, you know, he's been that hipster choice, hasn't he, as coach all the way through his career, which I think has given him an awful lot of cachet amongst a lot of the sort of like younger thinkers of football and writers about football who genuinely admire him and admire his football, his tactics and the way he goes about things, which I think has coloured things. And it may also be a response to just the political climate in this country, which is very, very divided. But making fun of foreign coaches for England team is no longer like fun anymore. It's kind of got darker undertones, which have become quite apparent. And maybe people just don't want to link this too much, or they're not ready to link it to the culture war, which I think a lot of people will do, because it's just not fair. It's not fair on anyone, and it's not healthy. I think you're right, Graham. I think there's a bit of that. But again, the only thing is that he's on such a short lease because he is a German. And I think that the English media's worst instincts could come out if things go badly. But qualification, you would think, is probably something that he would be able to achieve. So it'll only really get sticky once we get into those final stages of the World Cup, so the assumption is England are good enough to qualify, good enough to get through to the knockout stages of the qualifying tournament. And that's actually when I suspect Tuchel will be judged, unless he, you know, drops the ball. So yeah, it's a bit of a boiling pot. It was a bold move by the FA to make, and they must have had a few sleepless nights about whether or not appointing a German coach was a really good idea. But, you know, I know there's a broader conversation about why aren't we employing an English coach? And I think that there are legitimate questions about that, but there aren't enough English coaches really to do that job. And so they've gone for, I think, what is actually a very, very good selection. And it does appear to have pissed off the right people, for those of us who like to see right wingers upset.
Of course, they asked people like Sam Allardyce and Harry Redknapp. Of course they did, because that's what they do, because they pick up the phone, don't they?
Nothing else to do.
No, exactly. They've got nothing else better to do. And of course, you're going to get the same thing. Sam Allardyce did get this job, and it's entirely his fault that he didn't hold on to it.
Mm.
And yeah, Harry Redknapp wasn't offered the job because of very obvious reasons.
Mm.
English coaches coming through now are of a different breed than Sam Allardyce and Harry Redknapp. Not that they weren't good coaches. They were good coaches. Sam Allardyce was a very good coach. But, of course, they play up to their personas entirely because it works well with the media. The media loves that sort of idea of Harry Redknapp and Sam Allardyce rather than the types of managers that they actually are. There is a feeling, I suppose, within the media is the young English coaches now are just boring. They're people like Eddie Howe and Gareth Southgate. I mean, they're all people that aren't going to be phoning up some sports desk and giving them a few juicy insights about what's really going on the inside. When people say, where are the English coaches? Are they really saying, where are the new Sam Allardyces and Harry Redknapps rather than these Euro clones? Terry?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, since you put it like that, yeah, I can't disagree with that. I think that's an excellent way of looking at it. It would be interesting that Eddie Howe wasn't up for this, but he's in an incredibly political situation apparently at Newcastle. There's been some changes there, and he's doing very well to navigate his way through that. He actually might make an excellent national team coach once he's been through that journey. And I would like to see him complete that journey as much as possible before anything else, and to see what he can achieve with that. But yeah, I mean, like, you know, Graham Potter, who is, I mean, had he been a success at Chelsea, I think he would have been nailed on for the England job at this point, if he'd still been at Chelsea. But again, you know, Russell Martin, I mean, an, you know, interesting coach. But yeah, these guys have not, what they've not done is they've not adopted a media persona, which is really interesting. They've just focused on being quite, yeah, as you say, quite dull coaches. Their ultimate dream is to sort of like get some job in Bundesliga 2, you know, managing Magdeburg or something like that, you know, to earn their spurs. I think that to a degree it's kind of generational. These guys maybe have yet to grow into a point, you know, where they've been able to develop character, for want of a better term. But and I am talking about personas. They're not, these aren't, you know, this is how they are. They come, they haven't developed, you know, exciting and interesting personas that the media can get behind. But they haven't had the time, let's face it. You know, it's very, very competitive. And I think there's a lot of pressure on you when you're an English coach, particularly coaching in the professional leagues, in the upper echelons. And it's hard work. You don't have time to adopt a character. Because Sam Allardyce has had a great long career, both as a player and as a manager, and plenty of time to season and into with this authentic Sam Allardyce that we knew and loved towards the end of his career. And I mean, Jan and I, for example, have reason to be grateful for Sam Allardyce, because he was he's come in and intervened in our clubs at key moments. But he's had a degree of privilege to be able to move from job to job. If Russell Martin messes this up at like Southampton, for example, which he appears to be doing, when are we likely to see him again in the Premier League?
Yeah.
So, I mean, these guys don't have time to think about that. And I think it speaks an awful lot to the pressures that English coaches are under to be able to develop, and then indeed to then be in a position when they're ready to manage a team. And I think Gareth Southgate was a bit of an outlier in that respect, wasn't he? Because he was not a particularly spectacular Premier League coach. He had his moments, but he wasn't a spectacular Premier League coach. But he went through that FA system and was the right guy at the right time. And then when they've tried it again with Lee Carsley, and I'm sure they did try it again with Lee Carsley, I think in the happiest circumstances for the FA would have been that Carsley would have paid off and that they would have just given him a permanent contract. But that after the Greece game, I'm afraid that kind of ruled that out. And so now they're kind of back to hiring foreign coaches again. So it's kind of, you know, it is a bit disappointing, I suppose, but, you know, it's England. It's what we tend to do. Yeah. Believe it or not, we generally speaking tend to recruit foreigners for the kind of work that we need to get done.
That an Englishman doesn't want to do.
Or can't. Yeah.
I found that quite interesting, Terry. You were talking about, well, both of you actually, when you were saying about the kind of lack of any media personality, Potter, Howe and Southgate. Interestingly, two of those are out of work currently, and I think that if Howe doesn't get Newcastle into the Champions League this season, I think he may well be as well, which will be a great shame, because all three of those are incredibly talented. But there is something in the kind of desire to have someone a bit flamboyant, for example. And I'm not just talking about success. In fact, I'm not talking about success at all here. I'm talking about purely how these individuals carry themselves. Where is the English equivalent of Guardiola? Where's the English equivalent of Klopp, of Tuchel, of Simeone? I wrote down Poch, but maybe that's not a very good example. But certainly all of those have got really colourful personalities. And it may well be that it's just not really within the English character anymore to have people like Sam Allardyce. I mean, he was a bit of a hangover, if you like, in the way he carried himself from the kind of 80s, 70s and 80s kind of manager that was kind of involved in the dodgy deals and things like that. In case Sam's lawyers are listening, I don't think for a second he was involved in dodgy deals. In fact, I still wish he was at Sunderland, but there you go. So the coaches that are coming through England at the moment, I think you are right, they're quite bland, but they're just uber professional, I think. And they're so focused on what they need to achieve that I just don't think they've got the time to be that flamboyant. The coaches I mentioned all come from very colourful and glittering backgrounds, so maybe they've got the confidence to be able to do that. But the English guys have just got to, I suppose, they've got to earn their spurs, I suppose, haven't they, first, before they can start being a little bit more arrogant about things. Because you do miss a kind of arrogant manager. A Cluffy would be welcome right now, someone like that, who believed he was brilliant and actually was. that would be really good. But I hope those days aren't gone, because I would like to see, I'd like to see any manager be able to do that, because it does light up football. But it'd be good to have someone sitting in the England dugout doing that. Just one thing about Tuchel, just before we leave him, is that he's not going to have the weekly pressure that he had when he was running a club. There will be a lot of pressure, don't get me wrong, but it's not week in, week out. And he's got a choice of which players he can bring in. So he's got a lot more freedom than he would have had at any other club. However, I'm just fast forwarding to when he eventually leaves. And I think that unless he leaves like Southgate left under his own terms, having a really good period in charge of England under his belt, which is going to take a lot of doing because he's going to have to replicate what Southgate's done and then some. If he doesn't achieve that, then it's just going to be an absolute bin fire. It's going to be awful. And I feel for poor old Thomas Tuchel and his family, what they're going to go through when that day comes, because I think it will happen unless he can deliver.
Yeah. Then we could end up with a boring English manager to come in straight after him, though. I think that's how it usually goes, isn't it? We had Steve McClaren come in straight after Sven, didn't we? And then who came in immediately after Capello? It was Roy, wasn't it? Roy came in immediately after Fabio, didn't he?
Roy had a persona, though.
Roy did, yeah.
His football was very dull.
His football was very dull.
I think the guy.
But I think a lot of the things, I think one of the reasons why we don't see football managers with strong personalities or from glittering careers with strong personalities and a strong ideal is that most people who have got something to say about football and have got any sort of presence end up working in the media. And that's a hell of a lot easier than going into management.
Yeah, if Carragher had been a...
Yeah, yeah, the Carraghers as well. So these people are being taken out of the stream of becoming coaches. And that's why you've got a lot of ex-managers who are there who think, well, no, this is far easier. I'd much rather do this than be in charge of a Premier League club. I suppose the only exceptions you've got there are people like Frank Lampard, who is still out of a job at the moment and probably is looking back and thinking, actually, maybe I could get one of those comfy seats at the BBC or Sky, because he'd be well suited to it. And you know that they'll always offer a seat to him because it's Frank, isn't it?
It's Frank. Yeah, but I think he probably feels he's got one more Premier League club left. There's one club desperate enough to bring him in. If Glasner gets sacked after the Forest game this evening, for example, which he's not going to, but then that would be terrifying. I mean, obviously Stevie G is tied to the Saudi Pro League at the moment, but when that comes to an end, you know, well, what will he do? Will he go try again in England as a manager, or will he sit down in one of them comfy Sky Sports chairs and take the shilling that way? He'll certainly have plenty of time to decide with all the money that he's been earning there. You know, I mean, like, if we go back to, I can't believe this is where the conversation's gone, with like three middle-aged men talking about lack of characters in football. I mean, my 25-year-old self will be punching me in the gut now for having this conversation, because it is, I was like, oh, shut up, old man. But I suppose that's just how it goes. Harry Redknapp, for example, how long? He was a decade at Bournemouth, wasn't he, as manager there? He joined there, like, as a young coach, and he was there for ages. Plenty of time, largely out of the limelight, to sort of season his character and persona before coming in there. We are living in a different world. And, you know, being interesting may not seem like a requirement to be a top English coach, but actually it is. It's one of the earliest requirements of being a successful English coach, is being interesting, because that means the media are interested in you and that keeps them going, and everyone is happy because everybody likes the circus and the narrative around football. And if you're dull, then you don't get the column inches, you don't get the airtime that the football clubs want and that the media want to give you. They want football managers to be lively and full of personality, and our foreign managers are that. I mean, the outgoing Klopp oozed charisma in his own way. Guardiola is very, very charismatic. And Postecoglou, he's been here just over a season, made an instant hit, absolute gold, that guy. When I was with my short brief of running a sports news channel, we had a YouTube channel and the metrics for Ange. He was one of the most popular guys for the press conference footage, because he's such an interesting guy, an engaging guy to listen to, irrespective of the fact that, you know, he's Tottenham manager. Now, he's been around for a long time, but he came in and he was able to impose his persona on the Premier League within minutes in a way that I think an English coach just hasn't been able to do. So, yeah, it's a funny thing to talk about. You know, the game needs more characters. The game doesn't have the characters anymore. But actually, it is kind of part of the circus. It's a necessary part of it. So Russell, I know you've got a lot on your mind at the moment, mate, and bad luck on the result, by the way. That sounds like a bad piece of luck you got there. But you need to start working up. Gary O'Neill tried his best after the game, but he needs to work harder on these things. They need authenticity coaches, don't they, to come in there to teach coaches how to present an authentic persona and better endear him to the media and keep their jobs as well.
Yeah, exactly.
How many years was it between Kevin Keegan saying, I'd love it, between him saying that and him getting the England job?
When was that? 97?
96, wasn't it?
Something like that. And you took the job in 2000.
Yeah. There you go.
To be fair, Kev is a huge personality and a massive, household name, Kevin
and
Keegan.
And terrible as well.
but terrible. See, if Gary O'Neill would have a much, much better time of things if he went out there all guns blazing, saying everyone's against us and like we're like this is clear bias and there's nothing you can say and all of that. Because also the fans would get behind him as well. Like, and he definitely needs that.
Definitely.
So these guys need an injection of. I'm available, guys, as a consultant. I can do that. You know, a coach these days, they have to go to St. George's Park to get their badges. They have to go to, like, get their UEFA badges and all that stuff. And now they've got to do a three-week elective at RADA.
Yep, sounds good to me.
That was part of the problem that Potter had, really, at Chelsea, wasn't it? That he wasn't part of the circus. I mean, there was quite clearly a circus and a bin fire going on behind him, but because he was quite placid and measured in what he was saying, and it just didn't fit with the narrative surrounding Chelsea and what was happening with him at the time. So it's a shame because he'd gone to any other club and he may have got more time and so on, and he may have had a better fit. And I think that's what we're talking about here, isn't it? It's fit.
It's a poor hire, isn't it, Yo-Yang? It's a poor hire because, like, I mean, yeah, I mean, this is Chelsea is the club that Mourinho built, and so all coaches must have a bit of that when they come in there. And Potter had none of that, absolutely none of that. So yeah, it was a poor hire.
Yeah.
So it's not really Brian Potter's fault.
Yeah, yes, and I keep forgetting, you're not his biggest fan, are you?
I mean, I wouldn't have him at Palace, I hope he returns to management. So I wouldn't have him. That doesn't mean it won't happen, but I wouldn't.
I was going to say, I don't run have a choice.
Palace,
in that.
So obviously, I can't make the decision.
Do you know what? So tomorrow's breaking news is going to be. Don't
oh
you,
God!
Terry?
Yes. We all know that.
I won't listen anymore.
Well, talking about personalities and characters, obviously. Events are better if you get big names involved, aren't they? So it wasn't really any surprise when we found out yesterday that bald FIFA guy had made a bold decision and said, yes, we now know the 31st team to make it into next summer's Club World Cup. It's going to be Inter Miami for winning the Supporters' Shield in the MLS. Amazing news, isn't it, Terry? Because we weren't really sure of the criteria beforehand, but Gianni Infantino has decided, hey, why don't we just let, who are they, Inter Miami? Yeah, come on, you guys come in. You've got nice pink shirts, come in.
Let's not wait for the playoffs, guys. Let's not wait to see who the actual MLS champions are. Let's just go now. They've won the Supporters' Shield. Inter Miami have won the Supporters' Shield, which is basically like winning the league in the US.
But not.
So, you know, they've done well. They have won the league in the US. But, of course, as you know, listeners, because I suspect a great deal of you are from the US, as you know, the MLS is decided by a very, very lengthy, elaborate playoff competition, which is when the MLS actually becomes interesting. And the champions are the people who win the MLS Cup. The slot that Inter Miami have taken is the slot that's available for the host nation. And I think the assumption was that that would be this year's MLS Cup winner. But what appears to have happened is that they've decided, I don't know why, but they have decided, let's not wait for the playoffs. Let's just make the decision now. let's just give it to the Supporters' Shield winner, which happened to be Inter Miami. It happened to be Lionel Messi's Inter Miami. And I've got no idea why Lionel Messi's Inter Miami, you know, why they took that decision so quickly. Maybe it's got something to do with Lionel Messi's Inter Miami. I have no idea. Nevertheless, the news is that Lionel Messi's Inter Miami will be in the Club World Cup and not the MLS Champions, which may well turn out to be Lionel Messi's Inter Miami, of course, because they won the Supporters' Shield. They've got to be among the favourites. But
it doesn't always happen. In fact, from 2009, since we started doing this podcast, the winner of the Supporters' Shield has only gone on to win the MLS Cup 3 times.
Wow.
Yeah. So it happens about once every 5 or 6 years, the Supporters' Shield winner going on to pick up the MLS Cup. So, yeah, it's by no means a shoo-in that they will go on to win it. The last team to be selected for the Club World Cup is going to be the winner of the Copa Libertadores, and we won't know that until November, but maybe Gianni Infantino might go on the on the semi-final results and say, yeah, we'll have those ones. Or he might say, Lionel, which one do you think we should go with? Yeah, so, well, the MLS Cup final is early December. They don't have a date for the draw, but I suppose, you know, if you want D-Bex and Lionel to be at the draw, then, yeah, really, you don't want to be, like, waiting till then. Yeah, it's a classic FIFA fudge, isn't it, Jan?
One of the host cities is Miami, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you've got the world, arguably the world's best player, although it's fair to say he's not playing in one of the world's top leagues. But, you know, he is who he is, and he's a World Cup winner, and he's incredibly gifted and probably the greatest player, one of the greatest players who ever lived. So if you can get him in there, you're going to kind of want him in there, aren't you? So if you can shoehorn him in, you know, there's a few challenges the bald FIFA guy has got because, you know, he's got a competition that is controversial, that not many people are picking up the rights for. Are people even going to watch it, even if they can? In Europe, for example, where probably the biggest base is going to be, that's not within the kind of same time zone. And what better way to drum up some interest both in the USA and overseas than making sure that Lionel Messi's in there? It'd be great for all the other players that are in there, but mind you, they've got some good one. Luis Suarez is in there, who's a great player, but I'm not sure that's what swayed it. But, you know, if you're one of the other players that are in there, you kind of, you know, you're part of one of the best teams in the MLS, but you've kind of been squeezed in there, haven't you? Maybe haven't got there on 100% on merit. So I don't know how that's going to sit with everybody else. And as well as that, if you're Lionel Messi, are you not kind of thinking this is a bit insulting that now I'm being invited to things, whereas I used to win things? I used to actually qualify and get things and win things. I don't know. Terry's shaking his head furiously there.
Well, not furiously, but more in resignation. I think Leo is a professional guy and motivated by professional means, and I don't think he gives it a second thought. And also, why should he? I mean, like, he's the greatest. He's one of the greatest players there ever was, and he's got the medals to back it up with, so he doesn't need, I don't think he needs any further validation of his brilliance. But it is a cynical move. It is an opportunistic move, and it's pure bald FIFA guy. It's the BFG, absolutely, you know, in a nutshell. The guy just knows how to, you know, waiting for that moment. How do we get, we need to get Messi into this tournament. It's still early days, but they only recently announced the venues for this, which is unusual for a large international tournament. The broadcasters haven't been announced for this yet in a lot of territories, I think. So, and there's been other sort of like things going on around that have caused a bit of disquiet in sort of like broadcasts and stuff like that. I mean, TV companies a bit, you know, not really sure where this tournament sits in the calendar, whether or not it's a tournament that people are going to want to watch. My instinct is that I think in South America and in Asia, I think that this could be quite a successful tournament in terms of viewing figures. I think people might be interested in this tournament. I think it might be in the UEFA areas where perhaps because we just think our tournaments are better, frankly, than theirs, that, you know, we might not see a lot of value in it. I think the UEFA coaches as well might also look at that and say, look, you know, we're paid to participate and win games in our domestic league. And if we qualify in our UEFA competitions, this is not a competition. It's happening in our pre-season. I think that they will struggle to not see this as a pre-season tournament. I'm not altogether certain how enthusiastically and how committed they are going to be to this, but they will be under pressure to field their best players, because FIFA, yeah, they'll say, look, this is a major tournament, and you know, we need you to do this. And it's all right for MLS and a lot of clubs in South America, because they will play in the summer, but it's perfect for MLS because they play in this time. They can take a nice break for it. But for most of the UEFA teams, it's going to be a pain in the backside, really. And that will resonate with audiences. And if it's possible, like, for example, a UK broadcaster here might say, well, if Messi's in it, it might be worth a watch, might be worth putting on. Because I don't think the rest of the clubs are going to take it that seriously. And like you said last week, Graham, I mean, how are we going to get out of bed to watch Chelsea and Manchester City play in the Club World Cup?
No.
I wouldn't have thought so. No, I wouldn't have thought so. I mean, if Dortmund are in it, but even then, I don't think I'd get, if it was on, you know, on a Saturday morning or something like that, it's not even how it works, is it, actually? It's going to be like...
Yeah, it's going to be late evening.
Super late at night. So, yeah. No, I'll be asleep by then.
And arguably as well, it doesn't really sit well with the Asian markets as well, because it's even worse there. Games on the East Coast are going to be 11 hours out of those markets. So you might have some really, really weird kickoff times in this tournament just to satisfy global audiences. I just don't think, and especially with this rumbling of FIFPro threatening strike action as well, I think that's going to come out more and more over the next few months before next summer's tournament. There might become a bit more fuel under that fire when the draw happens in December. Don't worry, listeners, we're not going to do a fake draw for the Club World Cup.
No.
We are not doing a fake draw for that. No, you're safe. Ball FIFA guy has decided to drop into Miami and it really just made it more of a friendly tournament than it was anyway, I think, for me. It's easy now for people who don't like the idea of the Club World Cup, and I can't say that I've really got that much skin in the game as far as interest is concerned. So, yeah, I think it's just going to be something. It's going to be on when we should be watching cricket, because it's on in the summer and it's not an international tournament, is it?
Yeah, well, I mean, we should be catching up on our football books, you know, during this time. And yeah, as you say, putting the cricket on, or maybe the cycling or other summery pursuits than this, or what, you know, kind of, it doesn't clash completely with the Women's Euros, but obviously the Women's Euro starts in early July, so this tournament will be wrapping up sort of like in those early stages. Oh, and I know which tournament, where there's no competition there, apart from the LCS, Women's Euros is in Switzerland, 1 hour away in terms of time zones. So it's a complete and utter no-brainer. This is a tournament that I think no one genuinely asked for, and that, I think, is, you hear this a lot, people saying this, nobody wanted this tournament. But we've been given it anyway. And with 12 UEFA teams in there, I think it really rests on them. If they don't take it seriously, then, yeah.
But these things are going to start somewhere, haven't they? They haven't done it seriously before, really haven't thrown as much weight behind it as they have now. So, you know, if they can get the timings right and get Europe engaged and Asia engaged, and it's not just an Americas-centric tournament, and if they can make it interesting enough that the big clubs take it seriously, it could end up being a banger. You never know. Never know. I'm staying open-minded about it. I think it could end up being really, really good. You know, I'm sure people said the same thing when they started talking about playing football against Europeans. What's all that about? And it's part of the calendar now. So, well, maybe this may well be.
Yeah, it's been part of the calendar for years, though. And I still think that it's never really picked up. And just making it bigger, I don't think anyway, is going to improve that.
Because the original Club World Cup is still going on. It's six-team intercontinental trophy, it's now called.
Hmm.
And it started in September. They're playing bits and bobs, mostly, I think, it's in the Middle East. And it culminates in December. And Real Madrid, as European champions, are going to that. So it's not replacing the Club World Cup as it was. It's just taking
work.
It is, for all intents and purposes, a brand new tournament.
Yeah.
The original, they've just renamed the Club World Cup from last year. They're calling it the Intercontinental Trophy. Mm. I think that's what it's called.
Well, I think what it is that the Club World Cup is effectively replaced the Confederation Cup, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
But the Federation Cup was a 12-team tournament?
No, not even that. I think it was an 18-team tournament.
Yeah. It was quite nice, actually, the Confederations Cup, because it was a small tournament, you know, just a run through, just to sort of iron the kinks out of any issues, just to check the logistics. This is 32 teams. Bloody hell.
Yeah. It's going to honk. And I don't think it will come back for a second run.
I think there's a good chance of that.
That's my opinion.
But we'll see. Maybe Jan's right. We'll be open-minded about it.
Maybe Jan is right. Maybe we should mark this down. Is Jan right?
Jan said, yeah, and then we can acknowledge Jan's greatness when we're all doing a live YouTube watch-along of the final
yes.
at 3 o'clock in the morning or whenever it is.
Your official Club World Cup podcast.
Well, yeah, because we're available for that too as well.
Of course we are.
Oh, we are professionals.
Well, ball fever guy, just give us a call. You know we're here. Dear. But there'll be proper club competitions for us to watch this weekend, won't there? And some huge, huge games, including El Clasico on Saturday night.
Barcelona top the league, a win for Real Madrid, still won't let them overtake them because Barcelona's goal difference is mental because they're putting goals past everyone. It'll be an interesting one, but whether it's going to be a classic El Clasico, I don't know.
Well, it will be because it's sponsored by Coldplay, isn't it? Oh, yeah.
What? Oh, what's all that about?
Well, they'll have to read your preview and find out, won't they?
Well, I'll have to find out first by the sounds of it.
There are other big games as well this weekend. There's Arsenal-Liverpool as well. That'll be fun. And there are some Women's Euros qualifiers on Friday night. The playoffs start and Wales, Scotland and Northern Ireland are in action. They've got a bit of a tough route to get to the final tournament with two stages of playoffs to go through. England are also playing a friendly against Germany.
And if you want to see what we think of those games, get along to sofpodcast.com. Click on the subscribe button and it'll be in your inbox on Friday lunchtime-ish. Maybe a little bit later, but Friday lunchtime-ish. Or you can read it on the blog. It's up to you.
But that's all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, and from Terry DeFerlin, it's goodbye.
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 Get in touch with us on Blue Sky or Instagram, where we are at Sound of Football, or go to sofpodcast.com. Like us, share us, rate us and review us. Do it now! Hey, thank you!
Now that was beautiful. That was like being in Abbey Road Studios and Lennon's just struggling with, I can't get this key, and McCartney just comes out, just knocks out Let It Be. It's exactly what that was like.